Hello, good morning. Well, the main purpose of Agenda Paper 3 is to present to the Interpretations Committee a draft of a final agenda decision about the accounting for reverse acquisition transactions in which the accounting acquiree is not a business. We are recommending finalizing this tentative agenda decision only with some minor drafting changes as a result of the comments that we received from constituents when we exposed this agenda decision. So we have set out the wording for this final agenda decision, Appendix A, for your hopefully approval. So do you have any comments?
All right.
Yeah. One is drafting, which I will give to Denise afterwards. Then I have two questions. Why don't we send that issue as well for the post-implementation review of IFRS 3, or recommendation to have the post-implementation review of IFRS 3 have a look at it and see whether they want to write anything on it as part of the post-implementation review? My second one is more a comment when we say in that paragraph, fourth paragraph, last sentence, that the stock exchange listing does not meet the definition of an intangible asset or any other assets. Some may still argue, why isn't it an intangible asset? Mm-hmm. And we don't explain why.
But was that really the focus of the agenda decision, to explain why? I mean, I could include it, but this will be an endless tentative agenda decision. Yeah.
We say something? We say something, but we don't explain why. Not rejecting where we get to, but I'm just saying it's not square.
I think that's a fair point. Guido?
Okay, I'm a little bit fighting with myself here, because I think makes sense. I wanted to say correct, but I don't think it's correct. It makes sense because there's something in our agenda decision that says, I think it's a paragraph that starts with the Interpretations Committee observed that on the basis, and then we say of the shares deemed to have been issued. And I will tell you why I'm still struggling with this. I understand that we start in IFRS 3. And then we say applying the rules in IFRS 3 bring us to reverse acquisition, but we are not acquiring a business, so it's not in IFRS 3. And then we go to IFRS 2. And the reason why we have to say deemed to have issued the shares is because there is nothing such like a reverse acquisition notion in IFRS 2, which makes sense because IFRS 2 doesn't really look at who has control after the transaction. That's only important for IFRS 3, not for IFRS 2. Mm-hmm. And then the situation that we have here is that the company that's issuing the shares, which is the non-operating company, is actually the acquirer under IFRS 2. If you look to the share-based payment transaction definition in IFRS 2, the company that's issuing the shares is the acquirer. And again, who controls before or after doesn't really matter in IFRS 2. So this is really where I'm struggling with our way to conclude, coming to the conclusion that you need to account under IFRS 2 as an as-if reverse acquisition transaction, which doesn't really, it's not part of IFRS 2. So I don't know how we better could come to the conclusion that we have, because I think it makes sense, but I'm struggling with the way the arguments that lead us towards this conclusion.
Well, but it's also the fact that we discussed at previous meetings that IFRS 2 hasn't got complete guidance. So it hasn't got a guidance regarding the identification of the acquirer, and then on the measurement of the consideration transferred. So you have to go back to IFRS 3 to get that guidance. So I know it's a combination guidance,
understand that, and I don't have a problem with looking at other standards if there is a lack of information in IFRS 2. The problem that I have is that we are looking at a standard where reverse acquisition makes sense because of the control notion, and apply this to IFRS 2 where control doesn't play any role.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem that I have. And I'm not proposing that it would make sense to apply IFRS 2 and say, okay, the acquirer is the non-operating company because this is the company that issues shares, and then we wouldn't have the problem here whether it's an intangible asset or not, because what we are acquiring is an operating company. It's a complicated issue, but if everybody else is fine with it, then I'm in the minority anyway. I just wanted to raise this. I think I raised it before, and we still come to the same conclusion. That's fine with me. If everybody else is of this view, then we should go with it.
Andrew, and then Joanna.
I'm fine with it. I just had one comment on the amendment in the third paragraph, which says Interpretations Committee observed that on the basis that the listed non-operating entity is not a business. Does that mean because the listed non-operating entity is not a business? Because the way I could read that is that in a number of situations, that's an assumption, and that a non-operating entity could be a business. And I find that difficult to see how a non-operating entity could be a business. It's just those words on the basis can be read by that you could get situations where a non-operating entity is a business.
It could mean because or if.
Well, I think it's because, isn't it?
Well, like presuming.
Well, it's not. It's not a business.
That would be if.
Yeah.
Well, if you say if, that means you can envisage circumstances where non-operating entities are a business.
I think the problem is the definition of non-operating.
Yeah.
Yes.
Non-operating is an undefined term. I would agree with you. Certainly the way I use the term, I wouldn't think a non-operating business would, or non-operating entity would be a business. But I've heard people use the term non-operating to simply mean don't have sales yet. And that could be, I think, a business.
Joanna?
A number of comments. I've sent some drafting comments through to Denise, but just on that, on the basis that, because I support the on the basis that or the if argument rather than the because argument, for the very reason that, to me, we are not here to say it absolutely is, but we are saying that if it is, and making people use their judgment to determine whether it is or it isn't, that should, you know, on that basis, that's what it is. And likewise, I would actually, and it comes to Laurence's point around the intangible asset, I would say again that on the basis that the service received does not qualify for recognition as an asset, because that is why we are drawing the conclusion. But I don't think it is, as Denise says, that's not the point of what we're doing this for, is to say, is it or isn't it? But on the basis that it isn't, then this is how you account for it as an expense. So to me, I would make that amendment. I'm broadly in agreement. The only thing that I have is the very last sentence in the finalisation and the letter from the AASB as the submission around if this really is diversity in practice, and I'm just interested in other people's views, and it could change accounting, is it right that we are doing it as an agenda decision as opposed to actually doing it as an annual improvement? I thought the AASB, if we are right in saying there is considerable diversity out there and therefore people are going to have to change what they do and there are no transition and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, have we got it right to do it as a agenda decision? So there are two bits. One, I would actually get rid of that last sentence because to me that is a worry. But B, if there really is diversity, are we doing it the right way? And I'm not sure, Denise, you obviously thought through the response from the AASB and decided that it was okay. I'm interested in, if you like, you talking through that a bit more because I'm not 100% convinced.
I think Joanna, if I may, Joanna asks a fair question. My initial reaction is building on what Guido was saying, this is sufficiently complex that I don't think it fits annual improvements. It's either an interpretation or an amendment.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sensitive to Joanna's comments about the due process aspect. If this is going to change a significant fraction of practice, we ought to think about that. Denise, you wanted to come in?
No, it's fine.
Laurence?
My drafting comment was right to that third paragraph that Andrew, Scott, Joanna mentioned, because I agree with Joanna that here we're not here to address whether or not the non-operating entity is or is not a business. But we have taken as an assumption that it is not a business. So this is why I support the interpretation committee observes that if the listed non-operating entity is not a business, etc. So for me, the if is the appropriate drafting. Now, on that second issue about whether it is changing practices, I would remind the committee that last time, when the committee finalized an agenda rejection about whether some contingent payments are given to the former owners of a business, maybe dependent on some service, whether it's compensation or not, when we knew that this would be changing practices, the committee nonetheless decided to go with an agenda rejection. I pointed that. So I just would like to be consistent in the way we decide on agenda rejections or on the way we decide doing annual improvements, amendments, or sending it to the post-implementation review of IFRS 3.
It is possible to learn as we go along.
Sorry?
It is possible to learn as we go along, and we've
agenda rejection is creating problems today for many companies that are changing their practices.
And we have heard about that. And
not just from my firm.
No, I understand that, but that's why I say, in view of that experience, Joanna's comment does ring, at least deserves consideration. Scott and then Andrew.
Wayne, we should always reserve the right to get smarter. Two points. First, on this issue of does it change practice and what do we do with that? I would have thought that, yes, surely the answer that we've come up with is different than what some people have done. I would have thought that the way agenda decisions are usually interpreted in practice, that would not mean we have restatements. That this would essentially apply prospectively. And this seems like an easy one to have that happen with, because this is a very infrequent transaction in a company's life. While it may happen from time to time across the spectrum of companies, most companies go through this once or maybe twice in their life, and therefore the fact that they booked it wrong 3 years ago, well, it doesn't really have any continuing relevance, so I wouldn't have worried about going back. That's how I thought practice would have handled this, and therefore it doesn't particularly bother me that this is an agenda decision that is likely to change the way people do things going forward. The only other thing I wanted to point out in the drafting, we've said that the service involved is that of a stock exchange listing for the shares, and therefore that's an expense. And I think that makes sense. That answer is logical. The only thing I wanted to remind the committee of is that sometimes these transactions do result in a significant capital raise for the operating entity. There is a lot of cash sitting in the non-operating entity, and I want to make sure that, presuming we mean the excess is an expense, we don't care how much cash is sitting in that entity, we should make sure that the wording of this doesn't allow somebody to say, but in my transaction, there's a second service, that of raising capital, and therefore I don't have to put all the excess to expense. So I would like to find some words, and I did not come up with them myself, to make sure we don't leave that door open, presuming we're not intending to leave it open.
Andrew?
Well, just on the restatement point, I mean, I agree with the sentiments expressed by Scott, and just coming to Joanna's point, if we're going to delete that last sentence, because I'm not quite sure where that leaves us, because I thought we did, for want of, you know, for better words, think the answer was, quotes, clear and didn't expect diversity in practice. If we take that sentence out, what are we saying? We're not sure what the answer is, and we need an annual improvement, or I just don't know where that leaves us. So what are we saying? At the moment, it's clear what we're saying. If you take that sentence out, I'm not quite sure what we would be recommending or saying.
Joanna?
As much as anything else, I thought that we had generally in our rejection statements actually removed that sentence, the equivalence generally, because a nothing sentence, because like we used to do it 3 or 4 years ago. Recently, we have not put that in there because our constituents got cross with us because we were saying, well, it's clear, therefore there shouldn't be diversity. Well, obviously it wasn't clear, blah, blah. So I just thought that it was a standard thing that we actually had removed that sentence. So that's why I was suggesting that we remove it in this case.
Okay, so you're not suggesting by removing it, we're opening the door to the need for an annual improvement review?
I think my thinking was that we said there are two reasons we remove it. Number one, we're not clairvoyant, so we can't tell whether diversity will continue. Number two, as far as this organization is concerned, an agenda decision does not compel a change in accounting policy. Securities regulators can, if they want to, based on the agenda decision, and that's their job, not ours. Auditors can, or try, but within the corpus of IFRS, these do not compel a change in practice. John?
I'm happy with the agenda rejection. I think on the last sentence, I did think you could get rid of the word to continue at the end and be silent as to whether you expected diversity in practice not to continue, or you didn't expect diversity in practice should be existing. But if you get rid of the whole sentence, it doesn't affect the interpretation, in my view.
I would propose that we get rid of the whole sentence.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to actually put this one to a vote because I do think the due process issue is important. Show of hands for an amendment. I don't think it's an annual improvement. It's too complicated. Show of hands for an agenda rejection. How many was that?
10.
10-1, and I saw a couple who just didn't vote, and that's fine, too. So it's an agenda rejection. And we've got a bunch of editorial comments, probably better circulated the revision to everybody for a final sign-off offline.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Laurence?
Are we going to recommend to also have the post-implementation review looking at this?
If I can just say, I mean, the post-implementation review, one of the things that we do at the very start of that is to look back over all of the issues that came to the Interpretations Committee that are relevant to that standard. So there would be a natural look at that. The question I think you're asking is there something specific we want to flag here for the post-implementation review?
My point is just to bring this issue to the knowledge of those in charge of the post-implementation review, that it's part of the pack of issues which have been dealt with or have been raised and how we have addressed and whether they want to consider something more than what we did.
I think that would involve Michael writing a letter to himself. So, Peggy?
That was my point. If we have an amendment rejection, then what happens? We can't just leave this, I think, alone. So,
yep.
See, Michael, you'll be busy talking to yourself.
long as he doesn't use different voices to do it at the same time, we're okay. Okay. Denise, are we through?
Yes.
Well, we're through, but not, because now
yes.
We've moved to agenda paper 7, mm-hmm. which is also Denise's.
Okay.